When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This blows my mind. You blow my mind.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for coming with me today. I needed you.
I know.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 18, Eastern Standard Time. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Just so you know, dropping this Friday, October 24th, on Again With This, it is my interview with Rob Nagel.
Woo!
Whose last episode playing Tom Frost we are about to discuss. I think he was a lot happier about his departure in the interview than I am watching this episode, but we are going to talk about it and you should listen again with this podcast.com/club. Come along. We have a good time.
Yeah. All right, let's get into this episode, starting with our C-plot. Pacey and Drew spend ditch day in boring old Capeside. The only two senior losers at school on ditch day are, apparently, Pacey and Drew. Clip two.
I heard you'd be here, Drew. And far be it for me to miss out on even the smallest morsel of your flamboyant wit.
It's not what flamboyant means, but okay, moving on.
Drew has been told specifically that because of his many misdeeds over the year, if he ditched, he wouldn't graduate. He still told the administration to stick it, he claims, but then they called his mother and he just shrugs and Pacey laughs. Pacey's at school because he has a test-sized quiz in whatever class he's sitting in and an even bigger test tomorrow. So no, when Drew suggests that he's not interested in blowing off the afternoon. Then Drew tries to manipulate Pacey by getting all stressed out about what Joey might be up to in New York. We'll get to her while Pacey is at school like a chump. And when we see Pacey next, the bell is ringing and Dr. Rochford, we've never seen before, he's played by Mike Pnewski, who also played the shady DNC guy on The Good Wife and The Good Fight. Is there any other kind? No. He's coming in to needle Pacey, his only actual senior in this junior class. This is the first we've heard in a while about Pacey's whole academic crisis and all the classes he had to make up in order to graduate with his friends. I mean, we heard he didn't get into the college he thought he was going to get into, but now it's like, oh, he's not even a senior. Well, that explains it. I mean, anyway, yeah. It's about to be a thing.
Or why did he even apply?
Yeah.
The conflict that they're manufacturing to drive Joey and Pacey apart.
Yeah.
For reason, for TV arc reasons.
Yeah.
Is very dumb and assumes that nobody remembers that Andy basically rehabilitated his GPA in like a month and a half a couple seasons ago.
Yeah.
But of course, no one remembers anything that Andy did, even though she's still in the opening credits.
Yeah.
Sometimes the show makes me want to scream.
Yeah, she was in the show this season, even. Anyway, as far as Dr. Rochford knows, all the college acceptance letters have gone out. How are Pacey's options looking? Pacey says they're narrowing by the minute. As the rest of the juniors file in, Dr. Rochford says this is the first quiz of the rest of Pacey's life, or one of the last, if, as he's implying, Pacey's not getting in anywhere, you know? Pacey just stares at him for a long time, but manages not to actually cry. And when the bell rings at the end of class and everyone else starts handing forward their blue books, which that's not a quiz. People got blue books. That's an exam. Sorry.
That's an exam. 100%.
Pacey's the only one still scribbling until Dr. Rochford appears before him and Pacey is forced to stop. And then in the cafeteria, Pacey is just trying to put some damn ketchup on his fries when he overhears some of his classmates talking about how easy the quiz was. Drew is nearby hitting on some blondes when somehow he feels Pacey's eyes on him. you can see this in the visual aids. That's how it goes down. So he turns so that Pacey can silently beckon him over with a nod, and Drew nods back. It would be sexy if, you know, other circumstances were at play, but they're not. When we see them next, Drew has brought them to the Big Ace Saloon. Pacey cornily quotes a Star Wars line about Mos Eisley Cantina, which I guess is in character. What isn't, I feel, is that he would agree to drink at any local bar where presumably everyone would know who he is because of his dad and not be convinced by the 40-something Asian guy on the ID that Drew gives him.
No, in the off season?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But it works, and Drew gives the server $100 to start their tab. It was his dad's idea of a birthday gift. They are there, Drew says, because the bar is in the shadow of Capeside Community College. When Drew says it seems like that's in Pacey's future, it's not even in an unkind way, really. But Pacey doesn't disagree and adds that it's starting to feel a lot lonelier around there lately. Drew says it's dish day, and Pacey gives him a kind of motherfucker I know look you can see in the visual aids. Before saying he's not ready to have this conversation, but they do go on. Clip 3.
Despite the stigma of failure and loss, we're surrounded by good people. You know, smart people. People of substance.
Okay.
I mean, are you?
Yeah.
It's a bar during the day in late April, before the season starts. And also, could the writers please decide whether Drew is like to this manner born and knows all the ins and outs of like, here's the bars where you can get served. Like Pacey's the one who's from around here and would know all these tricks because his father's a cop and he had a bunch of older siblings.
Yeah.
This is very tiresome.
But they clink their tequila shots and drink to the future. And after they've had apparently quite a few and been playing cards for money, Mac the bartender comes over to quiz Dave, that's Pacey's nom de fake, about Rhode Island, where Dave is supposedly from. Pacey's too drunk to remember anything he may have ever known about which highways you take to get from there to here. And when the ones he invents don't convince native Rhode Islander Mac, Pacey finally decides to get up, loom over Mac, and ask if Mac is calling him a liar. And then Drew cracks up and Pacey joins him, and when we see them next, no one's laughing. Drew, the ecstasy-gifting Manhattan bad boy, is puking his guts out next to the cop car Pacey's glaring in.
Yeah, really convincingly, too. What are we doing with the boot loogies? I don't appreciate it.
But also, like, shouldn't he have a higher tolerance than that? I would assume he's sneaking drinks at the fucking yacht club all the time.
Yeah, he's also not a wee dude.
No.
He's like 6'2", 200. Come on. Yeah.
Anyway, that's what's happening when Doug comes to retrieve Pacey. Clip 4.
So what are you going to do, Doug? Arrest me?
I should. More, I'm just curious.
About what?
You're not satisfied with being a moron and failure? You got to add drunk to your list of credentials?
What? This is it for me! This is my whole life right here! This is all I get!
I do appreciate that Doug immediately is like, oh, fuck, I went too far. Like, I thought this was just our usual mean banter. I didn't realize I was actually fatally wounding him almost. But
yeah, which in Doug's defense, like the way his brother is being written doesn't seem to have any consistency or through line or underpinning to how life is lived for someone who is not going straight to unnamed Ivy College. So, yeah.
Lighten up, Doug. Jesus. On to the B plot. Dawson and Gretchen spend ditch day in a road trip comedy. We open on Dawson and Gretchen playing The Game of Life, one of the most boring board games there is, by the way. And
oh, God.
So
brutal.
I think a friend of ours, I forget if it was this or Payday, that she was like, the game should just be called Go Around because it's all you do. And it's true. Mm-hmm. And Monopoly is the same. Come at me. You would think that is why Dawson's mopey, but no, it's because Jen and Joey, whom we will get to, just got on a train to New York City. Gretchen asks if they don't have school tomorrow, which, first of all, okay, narc, but secondly, it's the eve of ditch day, and somehow Dawson never mentioned that to his girlfriend, who might wanted to have booked off that day to do something.
And has the house to herself now?
And, yeah. But of course, Gretchen has a story of her own about this. Clip 5.
You know, the night before our ditch day, me, Alice, Carol, Ted, and Bobby were sitting at my house, and we didn't have anything to do. So we got in our car, and we just started to drive south. We drove all night, all day, all the way to the Virginia state line, got out of our car, looked around, turned back, and drove home.
Okay, you know, for the umpteenth time, this takes place in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Please get a Rand McNally, tattoo it on your face, stare into the mirror, and figure out where these people are. That's A. Also, what is that reference to, like, a famous couple swapping movie from the late 60s, early 70s? Why are we... What?
Just because you mix up their names, so it's no longer Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, like the movie title. This just shows us you're much older than we thought you were. That's your reference. But also, this is so tiresome. Like, ugh, Gretchen, the life you've led, the crazy, wacky things you did, like you drove for a while. Great.
Yeah. It was a hoot. Ugh. Okay. Okay.
Dawson says he's never done anything like that with anyone. Gretchen asks why. Because it's pointless. Also, he did spontaneously go to Providence or wherever with Billy that time. Where did they go? I don't remember. And that was with a purpose, to go to a bar, which they did. But, you know, I guess that's not the point here. Smash cut to Dawson dragging Gretchen down the stairs by the arm because she has inspired him to copy the thing she did. And when we see them next, Dawson's pulling off with a flat tire after what we soon hear has been 6 hours of driving and saying, well, that happened. And then he says he doesn't have a spare because he gave it to a kid who needed a ride home, which seems like a scene we're supposed to remember, but did not happen on screen. Like, this is such a random thing to say for, like, why you don't have a spare.
Yeah, was it? I mean, did that mean Drew? Because that's not why Drew needed a ride.
No.
Okay.
Anyway, not that I want Gretchen to melt down about this like Stuart Carson did on his bad road trip with Brenda on 90210, but I don't love this either. Clip 6.
Well, I'm excited. I mean, this is exactly the kind of unforeseen complication that makes trips like this an adventure and not just an excursion.
I don't know why.
Shut up.
Thank you. She always has to act like there is no experience in life she hasn't had. And I think that's what bugs me about her the most.
Kind of. But then there's also that constant top note of, it's not the journey, it's the destination. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm just, or it's not the destination, it's the journey. Like, no, actually, it's the destination. Like, I just want to get there. Yeah. I have become my own dad. I just want to make good time, talk about it, and then take a nap.
Gretchen kisses Dawson for inspiration and then tells him to hide so she can get someone to pull over that they can hitch a ride from who won't want to pick up a babe and her boyfriend. But Dawson doesn't want her to do that. Clip 7.
Can I see the hitcher? Edgar Howard?
No, that's not his name. He's not a lost Howard brother to Ron and Clint.
I was going to say... He's actually in Apollo 13 in CENTCOM. He plays a chair. What are you talking about? God, this episode. Everyone is so over it, including us.
Dawson says they would regret it if they did that. We have seen Hitcher in the Dark, and based on that, he's probably right. Link to that is in the show notes. It was again with this number scrolls up to 12. So Gretchen asks what they are going to do. And fortunately, they've stopped just short of an extremely fake looking sign for Willoughby, Maine, 6 miles away, spelled no way anyone would ever spell Willoughby. It's W-I-L-L-O-W-B-Y, not O-U-G-H, which is how you always see it.
Yeah.
He says they can walk. Gretchen groans, but Dawson reminds her that she's the one who wanted an adventure. And when they make it to the main drag of Willoughby, it appears as though everyone has been raptured. Like, there's no one on the streets to a creepy degree.
Yeah, they're supposedly near Willoughby, Maine.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense for a, let's do a random road trip for, like, from the Cape. Fine.
Sure.
But then they're obviously somewhere in Maryland, like shooting somewhere in Maryland, because everything's crabs.
Right. Well, I assume they, like, were fake crab signs, because don't they have crabs in Maine as well? Like,
but yeah, but like on a sort of tourist boardwalk?
Right.
It would be lobsters. Even if you're a crab shack.
I see.
You know?
All right.
And that, well, we'll get to it when they interact with the mechanic guy.
Right. Okay. So based on the geography also of where they're coming from, and they like come around the corner, they walked over the ocean to get there. Like,
yeah.
There's no way this makes sense. But Irv's garage is open, and Irv, played by legendary Hates That Guy Pat Hingle, has tires. He just doesn't have any way of getting one to Dawson's Jeep because he's currently fixing his own truck, Eleanor Roosevelt. Dawson manages to sound nice and not pressed for time as he offers to help Irv fix the truck, and Gretchen heads off to find them something to eat. And here's how that goes. Clip 8.
Hi there. What do you want? Let me have a tuna salad.
Tuna.
Okay. How about the chicken salad?
I'll add a chicken salad too.
Egg salad?
Nope.
What do you have?
Beef.
Roast beef?
Sorta.
What does that mean? That's making me think it's person food. This town is so creepy.
It's beef with three E's.
Okay. Three in the middle or two in the middle and one at the end?
No, three in a row.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sure.
BF. And why would you get any mayonnaise-based dish at this joint? Bad, bad idea.
No. And also starting with tuna. Like, are you trying to shit the car? chicken if you must, but wow. Anyway. Assumedly because nowhere else is open, Gretchen takes two of whatever that is. And clip 9.
And can I get a couple of Cokes?
Pepsi.
Okay, they're in hell. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Literal
absolute
hell.
Absolute hell.
Mm-hmm. In the truck later, James Vanderbeek is squinting unattractively, as you can see in the visual aids, as Irv rambles on about his grandpappy or some shit. And abruptly, Gretchen cuts in to ask what all of this is going to cost them. Dawson scolds her that it's not a polite question when Irv is doing them this huge favor. But Irv isn't. He immediately says it's $60 for the tire and another $20 for the ride. Dawson tells Gretchen to give him the money. Smash cut to Irv leaving Gretchen and Dawson on the side of the road. Dawson whines that he spent all morning helping Irv, who says that was very nice of him, but no, he's not going to help their broke asses, and he takes off, taking his, by the way, very southern accent with him, because he's
his very southern Maine. Accent and his truck with Nebraska plates and registration. Where are they?
Well, that happened too, says Dawson. And when we see them next, they're back at the Jeep. Night has fallen. Gretchen is withholding Dawson's terrible sandwich until he comes up with a solution. Somehow it has taken him until now to think to go back into town and have his parents wire them money. Like, why wasn't that step one? What other option is there? They can't Venmo you on your phone you don't have. Gretchen asks if he even knows how that works, and Dawson stammers that he's seen the ads. It's the fastest way to send money. And I feel like even back then you could transfer money online through your bank, like to another account, but maybe that was only in Canada. I don't remember. I'll also say American banking technology is lagged behind Canada's. Sorry, but it's true. And Gretchen wonders how their experiences of the town could have been so different that he would think Willoughby even has a 24-hour Western Union office. Good point. This all seems like it's headed to these two fucking just because there's nothing else to do.
I mean, look, we've all been there.
How bored are we? All right.
Yeah. Blackout 2003, man. I know how I spent it.
On a beach, Gretchen is so impressed that Dawson built them a fire using wet matches that she takes back every mean thing she said today. He credits the Boy Scouts. She says it's sexy. He parlays that into a makeout. She breaks off to ask what's really going on with him. And clip 10.
Today is a perfect example. It's a perfect example of how our visions for our lives conflict with the realities. I still have my distortions and my delusions. I still think that everything should be perfect and that Joey and I should have slept together for the first time. What I've realized is that I gotta let go. You know, it's time. And there's so much ahead of me. There's college. There's this new baby. And there's you.
So what are you saying?
I'm in love with you. And I no longer remember what we're waiting for.
Neither do I.
Oh my God. Please let these two 31-year-olds fuck. Please.
Also, you might be waiting to do it somewhere you won't get sand in all your cracks and crevices, but leaving that aside, I have to go reset our days since last mention of Dawson and Joey losing their virginities together counter to zero.
I mean, that could be mean.
It
sometimes
looked cold.
Main beaches look like the surface of the moon. It's just like boulders that look like they were slung there and then like a little bit of sand. So maybe they were in Maine. I doubt it.
When we rejoin them, they've progressed to making out, lying down, and clip 11.
I want to make love to you.
We know you're old. No! Stop. Stop reminding us. No. But there's more. Clip 12.
And I really believe that that was why we came here. But it's not. As much as I want you and I love you, we're not gonna do this.
Why not?
Sam,
because when we go there, it's not gonna be because you have something to prove to yourself. It's gonna be because we love each other and because we're prepared to show each other what that really means.
Okay.
First of all, thank you for cutting it off before the Sweet Jane really got rolling. I'm so tired of that song for years now. But if what you really want, Gretchen, is for him not to still be a virgin who's kind of a little bit preoccupied with Joey still.
Yeah.
Wrong dude. Like, this is the boyfriend you have. Fuck him or break up.
Yeah.
I'd go with break up, but it's Dawson. He's not my thing. Or fuck him and break up. Why not?
There's only one more shot of these two in the episode. Dawson sprawled out sleeping on the blanket while Gretchen is next to him weeping. So let's put a pin in that until next week.
Let's put something in that.
On to the A-plot. Joey and Jen spend ditch day in New York City. We open this storyline with Jen in Tom's office. When he comments that she's quiet today and asks what's on her mind, she dreamily asks if he knows the song Sweet Jane. He knows the Cowboy Junkies version, but she says it's originally a Lou Reed song that she loved and learned by heart.
God.
Sorry.
Yeah.
This dissolves into Katie Holmes and Michelle Williams as Joey and Jen at the real Grand Central Station. Joey reminding Jen about all the spots she wants to hit in their one and only day in the city and expositing that Jen has her college meeting today. This really is a new Jen in that she just lets Joey babble excitedly and doesn't try to act all world weary and cosmopolitan about Joey's hick ass. So I appreciated that. Then we get a shot of the girls on the street looking cute right by Sarah's old apartment. And straight out of Drew wondering aloud to Pacey what Joey is doing in New York, we get a whole bunch of overdone yet antique B-roll, like the first season of The Real World, kind of, which you can see in the visual aids.
I know. Yeah, it's a lot.
And then we're at the coffee house I'm pretty sure has already been seen in Boston near Unnamed College when Joey went there with AJ and also hosted the Gay Straight Alliance meeting where Jack met Toby. Like, I'm sure this is the same actual North Carolina location. But now we're being asked to believe it's in Soho because the lamps on all the tables are in translucent human heads. Wow, that's so wacky. New York, what a town.
God.
Jen runs into the arms of her friend Typo, played by Cedric Pendleton, who's been in a few Tyler Perry productions, including 40 episodes of House of Pain. Here, he works at this coffee shop and is also the future of the Expressionist movement, according to Jen. Don't bother retaining any of this. He's in one scene and that's it. There is small talk about what the girls are in town for and a joke that with Joey never having been to Manhattan before, Typo can't imagine where she gets her clothes. I mean, look at them. American Eagle. When Jen gets excited about joining his regular Wednesday lunch with Ben and Monica at Barney Greengrass later, Joey reminds her about her meeting and Jen tells Typo about getting into the University of New York. I have to stop here and demand to know whose choice it was to have ditch day on a Wednesday. They are my enemy. So dumb.
Yeah. Also, and I understand why this is done this way, but like making Ditch Day official means that it's not Ditch Day.
Right.
It's a day off. Mm-hmm. Like in my day, you actually had to call, like get your friends to pretend to be each other's moms and then you could leave.
Yeah.
Campus and live your life. Like, I don't know. There are a lot of problems with this episode and we're just talking about cosmetic ones, but oh boy.
Oh boy. So Typo's excited that their friends might get Jen back to New York, but she manages his expectations by saying she's only thinking about it. And Joey says it's so far from where they live, which it's not. It's a 3-hour train ride from Boston. I looked it up.
Oh my God. It's 6 hours by car, like at worst.
Yeah.
I don't, and like you have other cities. Yes. It's not Dubai.
Someone in your friend group is going to USC. That's far. Like,
yeah.
Boston to New York is nothing.
And yeah, like even metaphorically, like if someone were going to the University of Iowa,
mm-hmm.
like that's sort of like a leap geographically.
Or yes.
Whatever. But yes. Like, writers, you are not actually writing for people who are in a tiny town in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They can be in a city in an hour.
Yeah.
Where do you get your clothes? Like, buddy, okay.
Joey can't believe there's any question about Jen wanting to get back to the city. And in response, Jen misquotes the Thomas Wolfe line, "You can't go home again." And then we're on the for real St. Mark's Place, RIP Kim's video. We miss her.
Mm-hmm.
Joey has a question. Clip 13.
Jen, what did they say the name of the admissions guy was?
Thomas Stevenson.
I have to wonder if a writer saw Wet Hot American Summer at a festival before it came out, because it was not in theaters yet by this point when the episode aired, but it had been at Sundance, I'm pretty sure, and it's very this, clip 14.
Amanda Klein, Jessica Azaria, Ira Stevenberg, Saul Zimmerstein, David Ben-Gurion.
I totally forgot that one. I just assumed that everyone else had been Poppy Fields' movie intaking Fletch.
Mm-mm. Well, let's hear that, clip 15.
John Cocktoastle.
I just, yeah. Gotta be John Cocktoastin.
Uh-huh. Anyway, other times Jen apparently claimed she was meeting a Steve Thompson or Thomas Stetson. And in my opinion, it's weirder for Joey to have asked this person's name ever. Like, she's not going. Who cares? Like, are you looking him up on LinkedIn? Shut up. But Joey's unstated suspicions are correct. Jen does not have a meeting. She has to see her dad. She has questions about why her life is the way it is that she's not going to be able to answer until she talks to him. But Joey will be fine and Jen will meet her at 8 outside the Mercer Hotel. And as they prepare to split up, Joey's touched that Jen really was listening when Joey ran down her itinerary and quietly wonders why she feels like she's not going to see Jen again. Jen says she will, and Joey hesitates for a second before running after her and saying Jen's right because Joey's going with her, and Jen doesn't try to stop her. And then Jen and Joey are getting off an elevator outside the Warner Sachs Lindley Venture Group. Jen is about to barge right in when Joey stops her with some advice from her own experience, clip 16.
After urgent realization and revelation, you traveled all the way to New York City to see this man, to confront him about something and what I'm feeling will be one of the seminal moments of your entire life.
Don't say seminal.
I've been there. At least close enough to know that it only happens once, so you better take a second to think about what that's going to be.
Oh, that's good advice, actually.
That was a little overwritten, but one of the only things that I like about this episode is that it's the two of them.
Yeah.
And the way they're playing off each other, and that Katie Holmes is like, I remember from the first time we watched this, which I think I recapped it.
I think you did
it's
too.
An even number, but yeah. Hearing, I feel like I'm not going to see you again the first time she says it and being like chilled.
Yeah,
at the time that I was like, yeah, this is getting like real dark. I don't like where this is going. And that remains true, but for different reasons. Yeah. So on we go.
In the public bathroom, which improbably has Terry hand towels like in a guest bath, Joey asks what happened to Jen. She tells a rambling story about how much she used to hate Capeside because she was scared of Grams. And one time when she bitched so much about going for a weekend with her mother that Mrs. Lindley finally just gave up and told her to go home. Jen was so excited to spend a whole weekend with her dad because she loved him so much. But and then some old bag comes in and the girls step out picking their knapsacks up off the filthy public bathroom floor.
God.
No Amy Sugarman, but gross, gross.
Yeah, barf.
Then we're in Jen's dad's office as an assistant named Donna tells him there are two young girls there to see him. And one is saying she's his daughter. So guess this lady's new and or Jen's dad doesn't have any even kind of recent photos of Jen on his desk.
Oh.
He's played by another great Hayes, that guy, Don McManus. I probably know him best as one of the gay hoteliers from Northern Exposure, but he's been in a million other things.
Mm-hmm. When you can't afford Brett Cullen,
uh-huh.
or Brett Cullen thinks he's too good for TV, yep. you get Don McManus.
Yep. He motions for Donna to let the girls in, which, like, Joey, maybe wait in reception, you weirdo. But I don't know exactly what I was expecting Jen's father to do when he saw Jen, but it was not throw his arms around her like a drowning man and say this, clip 17.
Angel, I am so glad you're here.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Ooh. Jen wasn't expecting it either, since he grabs her so hard and suddenly that she makes that little noise at the beginning of the clip, like, anyway.
Yeah.
When he lets her go, he notices there's another person in the room and loudly asks if she's a friend of Jen's. Jen introduces Joey and we get Jen's dad's name, which also unexpectedly is Theo. I really feel like a finance guy would be a Ted, personally.
Yeah, especially one that went to Princeton. And mm-hmm. I definitely have to update my old previously.tv TV's worst Princetonians list.
Yeah,
he's way down there.
Mm-hmm. He asks what brings them to the city, and Joey takes it upon herself to announce that Jen got into the University of New York. Like, obviously, this relationship is fraught. Consider that she either might want to tell him herself or might not want him to know.
Did you feel like this was, they were giving her like pacey dialogue?
Mm.
It just felt really off label for Joey and Jen's relationship. Like, not that they don't get along and aren't friends mm-hmm. now, especially like whatever, how much time has gone by.
Yeah.
They all just seemed like pacey lines that should have been used for him and not on, I don't know, like she had good advice in the bathroom.
Yeah.
But someone should have given her the advice, don't put your stuff down on the puddly ground.
Yes.
But still, like, this sort of, like, she really is pitching Jen to Mr. Lindley, but not in a way that's like she's babbling because she's uncomfortable. It's
right.
just like pacey dialogue that yes. is repurposed, and it's weird.
Yeah, no, she was doing it in the typo scene as well. It's like Jen is shutting down for reasons that we will mm-hmm. soon know, kind of. And so someone in the scene has to be the one giving the exposition that moves it forward. And that has to be Joey, even though, like you're saying, she's acting like Pacey in the Christmas Worthington party episode when Joey was like totally socially awkward.
Yeah. So if you are able to be this person, you should yeah. be this person for your boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
probably also, but unlikely. Anyway, moving on.
Theo yells to Donna that Jen got into college, so Donna should cancel this afternoon and make them a reservation for lunch. Jen tries to tell him he doesn't have to, but he intensely says she got accepted to college. That's more important than any of his stupid meetings. Jen is still wary, and Joey looks suspicious as hell. And at the restaurant, Theo acts like a big shot, ordering scotch for himself at a Shirley Temple for Jen, who is 18. Doesn't look like it's what she wants, but also does not contradict him. Jen starts to say something and then loses her nerve, so it falls to Joey to resume doing Jen's PR, announcing that Jen got into 5 of the 6 colleges she applied to. Theo thinks that's amazing. Clip 18.
See, when I applied to school, I was only accepted at one, Princeton. But it made the decision-making process a lot easier.
Your friend.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Cool.
Joey says Jen has a lot of choices. Theo adds that she also has impeccable judgment. Jen isn't making eye contact with anyone, so Theo asks if Joey knows where she's going. She says probably Boston, and Theo theatrically asks why not New York, an education and an inspiration in itself. Joey thinks it's a bit big, but Theo says having lived there 30 years, it surprises him every day. Joey makes the mistake of asking how, requiring us all to endure this. Clip 19.
Oh, God.
A city like New York, where everything's moving all the time, with this constant driving pace, it's like a living organism, breathing and changing, and over time, your relationship to it becomes like this incredible romance. At first, it's intoxicating, irresistible, and then slowly it becomes comfortable and safe. You have this cellular connection to it, as if you've known each other forever, like your oldest happiness. And sometimes you're on the outs, and sometimes you're making up. And every now and then you catch yourself in this transcendent moment.
No, you
where
don't.
You think to yourself, oh my God, I'm madly in love with you. And I always will be. And I think that's when it surprises me.
Oh, okay. So this is the kind of bullshit Theo busts out when he's trying to fuck someone. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe save it for that. Mm-hmm. I think Joey's a little older than you like him. Oh,
yeah.
Nobody who has lived here longer than a month has ever talked about it like this. I think you might talk about a small town like that, but it's just really like it gets comfortable and safe. Like, I don't think even super rich hedge fund guys like this guy theoretically is would mm-hmm. talk about it like that.
Yeah.
Or talk about anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
You do have occasionally a moment where you're like, oh, shit, I live in New York City. Like, you're cutting yeah. through a corner of Central Park in the fall, and you're like, oh, damn,
mm-hmm.
wicked. But you don't say transcendent to your teenage daughter's friend.
No.
Like, you're but trying to smarm on her. It's nasty. Shut up.
Joey does look, I'm sorry to say, kind of seduced while Jen is, like, visibly dissociating.
Yeah, she really is.
Both of these in the visual aids. So when Jen and Joey have been served their entrees but are politely waiting to start because Theo's not there, Theo returns from the excuse store claiming he had to get back to the office to deal with a stupid business thing. Excuse me, discount excuse warehouse. He briskly assures them that everything's paid for and peels off a bunch of hundreds so that Jen can take Joey on a great night in New York, and is already backing out as he tells Joey that Jen is a great tour guide who knows the city better than anyone and has created so much distance that he can bellow to Jen that she gets more beautiful all the time and not worry that she's going to ask how he could possibly know. He also says he'll see her around and call her when we know quite well he will not.
Mm-mm. And her mother is not really mentioned
yeah.
by him or her after the train story. Like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know really what is the story there.
I don't either. And neither did the writers.
No.
Get a show Bible.
Yeah.
Writing it.
Then Jen is bringing Joey up to the roof of presumably her dad's office. Clip 20.
So, below us is Wall Street. World Trade Center, Tribeca, Lower East Side, Soho, Washington Square Park, Flatiron, Union Square. Up in the distance, that's Midtown. Rockefeller Center, Theater District, Radio City, and the Empire State Building.
Okay, you can't see all of that without turning around and going that fast yeah. and without context is not really being a great tour guide, in my opinion. Like, I know it would be boring to be like, okay, see over there? No, no, over there. No, no, over there. That's whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you could see a few of those things, but if I think they were somewhere in the seaport, like, you can't see Radio City unless you're in the plaza.
No.
So.
Well, I think she was
not
just
the
saying
hotel, but,
it's yeah. that way. It's north or whatever. Oh,
okay, like, gotcha.
You know, it's one of the things that you've heard of. Jen ends on a corny, I do love this town. And Joey gawks at how amazing it all is. Jen says it's better up close, which is apparently a lesson Katie Holmes has evidently learned, because as far as I can tell, she currently spends 85% of her waking hours walking around New York to get photographed for street style blogs so that I can get a Vogue.com blast about them. Joey says, all this blows her mind, and so does Jen. She Jen thanks Joey for coming with her because Jen really needed her, and Joey just says she knows, and it's nice. Like you said, these are the moments that make this episode worthwhile.
Yep.
And sometime later, Joey asks what happened after Jen's mother left her on the train platform in that story she was telling in the can earlier. Jen smiles ruefully and says she wandered around the city all weekend. Joey seems scared even to ask where Jen slept, and we get this, clip 21.
The first night I slept in the parking lot of this office building that I always used to pass on my way to school.
No, office buildings on the Upper East Side don't have lots. They have garages, probably with attendants.
Yeah. Also, were there office buildings up there at that time? I don't think so. It was before WeWork.
Yeah.
Also, didn't you have a boyfriend and friends? Like, why didn't you just go to Drew's? Mm-hmm. I don't understand this New York.
Yeah.
Then again, they talk about her having sex at 12 like it's not a felony. So.
Right. Well, she also doesn't say how old she was at the time of this. So this might have been pre-Drew and pre-Billy, but presumably had friends.
Yeah, true.
Like, get to a payphone, call a girl. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Moving on, clip 22.
Next night, I fell asleep in the VIP room of this club called Purgatory.
I don't get it.
Let's just fucking... You could see even she is like, all right, let's just grind through this.
Yeah, I'll do what scenery. I can. Chuckle, mm-hmm. Purgatory. Finally,
yeah.
Clip 23.
And the last night... I slept in the dorm room with this guy that I met at a bar.
And why didn't you go home to be with your father?
I did. I had to go.
I miss.
I'm sorry, are you gonna be okay?
Be fine, are you gonna be okay?
Yeah, maybe for the first time.
I still feel like we're not gonna see you again.
We'll see.
Uh-oh, we'll see means no.
Yeah, like I really, that's when you definitely need to insist that you're tagging along.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't do anything crazy, Jen. Friendship with a busy Phillips character is in your future, which is not mm-hmm. quite what Joey says. Yeah. Clip 24.
Hang in there.
Jen, the train leaves at 11. Make it. I mean, we need you back there.
I would still be like, you're not leaving my sight, sorry, but mm-hmm. she really does sound suicidal ideations are
yes
in the conversation. Like, so that was the right thing to say if you are going to let her go do whatever it is she's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Jen just smiles enigmatically and drifts off, not exactly beating the about to die by suicide allegations. And also, I hope before she left, she showed Joey how to get back inside. It's a good way to get locked on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jen is slowly walking through her parents' anonymously elegant townhouse. And just a reminder, in the last episode, we heard it was a deluxe apartment in the sky, which this is not. It's like a 4-story building, probably. It's not a high rise. But never mind. She's walking toward Theo, who is passed out in front of a fire in a leather wing chair with his hand on a snifter of something. He wakes up when Jen gets around to the side of the chair. And clip 25.
I took a cab here.
What?
And all the way I had these visions of coming in and announcing that I wasn't going to Capeside.
What are you talking about?
And you'd smile. And we'd go for a walk.
Jen, it's really late.
And I came up the stairs. I unlocked the door and I put my bag down and I didn't hear anything, so I thought maybe you weren't there.
I was just resting. I'm awake now.
And then I heard something. I heard a voice, a whimper, very far away. And then I heard it again. And this time I recognized it. And I knew that it was Annie.
Who?
Annie Sawyer. She lived in the apartment downstairs with her parents. And
She was probably the age I am right now.
I thought that was really well written. Like, it takes a while before you realize she's not talking about tonight, you know?
Yeah.
He has just enough presence of mind to pretend he's surprised to hear Annie was in their apartment, and Jen scoffs bitterly and then says he was having sex with her. He left the bedroom door open. He springs up and clip 26.
Jennifer, you need some help. Have you talked to anyone about this?
And I backed out the hall and I went down the stairs and I slipped out the front door and I disappeared onto Fifth Avenue in a big crowd. It was after that that things started to get really bad, didn't they?
You have imagined in great detail something that never actually happened a very long time ago.
Dad, who are you?
I'm your father.
You knew, didn't you? God, all this time. My life got uglier and messier, and then you sent me away. You made me feel ashamed. You punished me for all these things that were beyond my control. You saw me standing in the doorway. And you never said anything.
I mean, this is tremendous acting, first of all.
Both of them, I think.
Yeah. Listening to it again, it seems really clear that originally this was conceived as him harming her Jennifer. Yeah.
Yes.
And they backed off of that wisely, I think.
I agree.
This was really like tacking towards it for a really long time. And I think wiser heads prevailing is good. But that last part of the dialogue really reads like there was another scene where she was saying this to Helen. And that Helen, that's the mom's name.
Yeah, yeah, right? Helen.
Okay. To Mrs. Lindley, who sort of didn't believe her, sent her away, and they just let her spiral out of control after being harmed.
Yes.
In Capeside, and just were like in denial and sent her off to Gramps.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it was like, oh, we really can't go all the way to this place, so we're going to have to collapse everything down. So some of it makes a little more sense from that standpoint. And I have to give Michelle Williams credit. She almost makes this as the big trauma that she blanked out for however many years. She almost sells me on the idea that this is how it happened and not they got all the way up to abuse and then were like, oh no, we can't. Not that that's not what he also was doing to Annie Sawyer. I just don't think that was the original intent.
Right. And I think, you know, we saw the horrible version of this already on 90210 with Val's character, where it's like it was all over the map. It was clear they didn't know what they were doing from season to season with that character. And when they finally got to, he was raping her. Her father was raping her and they murdered him. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, you needed a stronger hand on the tiller and someone was thinking sensibly here. Probably Greg Berlanti.
Yeah. And whoever it was, good call. Like, was this a little bit of like, I mean, I don't really want to use the term anticlimax.
Well, here, yes.
But does this seem like a lot of buildup to less than you expect? Yeah. Did they have anywhere to go once they went all the way with that idea? Mm-hmm. No. Like, that's not what this show is for. Right. So wise move.
No, it's a teen romance. Like, it's let's keep it light. And they did as light as they could and still having something that wasn't you threw my doll away or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll also say, as good as Michelle Williams is, and you can hear it in the clip, what you can't see is Don McManus's drunk acting, which is also really good. When he blinks, and I made a gif of this, you can see in the visual aids, it looks like it's taking a lot of effort, and his eyes roll back in his head a little bit just before they close. Like, it's a lot of detail that was not required, but he brings a lot to this part.
Yeah, and they could have gone that direction with it, too, that he was just overcome by substance misuse, but right. he definitely does have that like struggling to have Jen resolve in yeah. his vision to just one Jen mm-hmm. and not seeing two of her.
Yeah.
Good point.
So he half-heartedly tries to deny it, but Jen doesn't need him to confess or apologize, and she doesn't have to forgive him. She just has to forgive herself for the things she can't change. She says goodbye, and Theo has nothing to say in response, and that's a series wrap on Don McManus. Not that I wanted to see more of this character, but I would have liked to see more of the performance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, or any aftermath, but we'll talk about that more in a moment.
Yeah. So then after a montage of all the characters wondering where their lives will go next, set to the Cowboy Junkies cover of Sweet Jane, we're back at Grand Central, as the train to Cape Side is called. Joey looks around worriedly, but eventually Jen does show up looking shattered, and Joey just gives her a big hug, and it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Tom's office. Jen says the visit was good. She needed to go back. She did, and she's done. She got what she needed. Clip 27.
You know you're not done. Not even close. We just opened this door. We're only just starting to make sense.
No, I'm finished. Jen. Tom, I get it. I do, and I appreciate it, and I'm really glad that we could do this, but I don't have anything else to say.
It's not really how therapy works, and I think you were, like, mandated to do this
mm-hmm.
after yet another acting out fuck-up, so, I get this is a contractual thing, and they mm-hmm. just want to get off this third rail of a storyline,
yep.
so whatever, but it's like, oh, wow, whiplash.
Well, I mean, it also might have been you are required to do 50 sessions, and she just got through them really fast because she was going for a week. So,
yeah, true.
You know, and he gives a little last wave that you can see in the visual aids. And that's a series wrap on Rob Nagel as well. But we will hear more from him on Friday. Can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with this podcast.com/club to get in there and hear it. Let's name our episode MVP. I mean, I think Michelle Williams is just knocking it absolutely out of the park and shaming all of her co-stars, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from a character standpoint, I would say Joey, who mm-hmm. just like got the lay of the situation.
Yeah.
Bad phrasing. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then just was like, all right, this started out as like a fun trip, but now I see what this is now and I am the wingman.
Yep.
So good for her as well.
Agree. Least valuable player.
Oh,
I mean, it's kind of got to be Theo, I feel.
Yeah.
He's not Hundo a good guy.
Theo. Yeah, not close. Gross.
And truly, like, trying to fuck Joey in front of Jen. Like, not subtly yeah. either. Boo.
Realizes that's not going to happen and bails?
Yeah.
To go get drunk some more? Okay.
That's it.
Whew, we did it. All right, next time on Again With This, Dawson's new sibling is about to make their entrance. Gretchen contemplates making an exit. Joey and Pacey might have made a little Pacifine pitter. And an assault on Toby makes Jack think twice about his feelings. You should make a beeline for protective goggles before looking at our visual aids. We do them for every episode of the podcast. You can find them along with the episodes themselves on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Last Train to Cape Side, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Single Sandwich Menu, Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, doesn't have anything else to say. Talk to you next time.
Well, I'm not sure what the segue is here, but...